How do you like your coffee? Freshly roasted? You can just smell it, can't you? Well, how would you like it brought to you? If you're passionate about your coffee, then a Passion for the Bean is for you. At a Passion for the Bean, they custom roast coffee beans from around the world when you place your order, so your coffee is guaranteed to be fresh, rich, full-bodied, and full of flavor. That's not the taste that you get from coffee beans that have been sitting on a supermarket or coffeehouse shelf for weeks. Now, to have the ultimate coffee experience delivered to your home or office, call a Passion for the Bean at 480-703-2326. That's 480-703-BEAN. A Passion for the Bean has joined forces with the American Stroke Association in the fight to end stroke. Now, you can help by purchasing an ASA signature blend, and 30% of the proceeds will go directly to the ASA. Help us put an end to stroke. The life you save may be your own. And call a Passion for the Bean today, 480-703-2326.
From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. And this is a show where every week we deal with mental health issues from a holistic perspective, which means finding balance in our lives between body, mind, spirit, emotions, psychology, culture. The key word there is balance, because with balance comes clarity and peace. Now, we all know that the truth will set you free. The question we ask here is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? So, if you've listened to the show once or twice or often over the last 4 years, you know that it's not unusual for me to do shows dealing with spirituality or the spiritual components of the work that we do in terms of the healing process that I call psychotherapy. That's what I mean by body-mind-spirit connection, because my belief and my experience is that if you're only dealing with what's going on intellectually or mentally, if you're only dealing with the emotions and not dealing with the physical, if you're leaving any component of who we are out of the equation, then the healing that people are seeking in therapy, in life in general, is not going to be complete and will not be able to be integrated properly. And without the deep-rooted integration of the healing process, of a connection to what our own truths are in the world, and how we define ourselves as human beings, as spiritual beings, as members of a culture or a society, that unless we're really clear on all of that and comfortable with all of that and feel the truth in what it is we're defining and identifying, then we're going to continue struggling, we're going to continue being unhappy, we're going to continue having difficult relationships if we have relationships at all. So, for the last 5 or 6 weeks, because June's Gay Pride, I've done a number of shows. I think maybe 4 out of the 6 shows I've done, or maybe 5 out of the 6 shows I've done in the last 5 or 6 weeks, have been related specifically to gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender issues. Now, I do that throughout the year periodically, but June is Gay Pride Month, so I tend to do a little bit more around this time of year. Tonight's topic is coming out spiritually, the next step. Coming out spiritually is the title of a book written by a friend of mine named Christian De La Huerta. And Christian I met a number of years ago through a friend of mine. And I believe until a couple of weeks ago, when Christian was in Los Angeles speaking at a conference that I invited him to, I believe, if I'm right, and he may correct me when I introduce him, that we only had one lunch together, one face-to-face, and that was probably about 9 years ago. And yet, the sense of connection I've had with this man has always been deep. Whenever I've heard his name, whenever I've seen anything written by him, whenever my friend, our mutual friend Gustavo, has mentioned his name, there's always a real sense of respect and connection that I've always felt with him. Now, Christian has a degree in psychology from Tulane University, and more than that, besides coming out spiritually, he's written other books. He's well-written in terms of articles in many periodicals. He runs workshops. He teaches seminars. And he does, like myself, rebirthing or breath work and many other things. He's just an incredible guide and a very wise soul. So, Christian, I really want to welcome you to the show tonight, and I'm glad you're taking your time on a Friday night to join us.
Thank you, Stuart. What a beautiful and well-spoken and generous introduction. I'm very touched. Thank you.
Well, it is very sincere. And I actually want to start by reading a paragraph from your book right off the top, and then we're going to get right into this conversation. Because the title of your book is Coming Out Spiritually, which is a topic that every human being can relate to.
Right.
It is about what I said earlier about what therapy is about, what our life's journey is about, is defining who we are as spiritual beings and expressing that more fully in the world. Whether we're gay, lesbian, or heterosexual, it doesn't really matter. It's about the spiritual journey and the healing process, correct?
Correct. Absolutely.
Okay. So you have this paragraph on page 127 that I really feel is important to lay the foundation to what we're doing here tonight. And it says on page 127, that is why coming out first entails coming in, plunging into the depths of ourselves to discover who we are and what lies beneath the murky waters of our conditioning. It requires that we do our homework and cultivate our own gardens, whether that means going to therapy or developing some other method of self-awareness and self-observation for confronting our own inner or outer demons. In this ultimate sense, coming out from whichever closet is about healing ourselves. It means shedding the skins of our old identities of woundedness and victimization and emerging transformed as the being that we really are. Empowered, compassionate, loving, ready to make a difference in the world, and fully able to embrace the totality of life. Coming out and coming out spiritually requires courage. It's so well spoken, and it is exactly the way, I mean, in my own words, that I couch what therapy is about, what the show about telling the truth faster is about. And it is about coming out in all aspects of who we are. It's not always about sexual orientation coming out, but therapy is about coming out, and that process is about going inside to find out who's showing up outwardly.
Mm-hmm.
So I really appreciate what you said with that. When you talk about, what can you say to expand on that in terms of the general issues that people have in terms of their own spiritual journeys?
Well, I guess the way that I can add to that is by saying that I really do believe, as you have been alluding to, that coming out is really a universal experiment. A universal experience. That it's not something that's exclusive to gay, lesbian, bi, trans folk. So that when we look at it in the ultimate sense, expressing who we are at our essence, like delving underneath all the conditioning and expressing who we are in the world, that is what I mean by coming out spiritually. And as far as I'm concerned, like that's all our ultimate responsibility. I like to say, too, that there isn't another human being in this world or any other world that combines the particular genetics and the particular set of experiences that make each one of us who we are. And so that if we don't give expression to that fully, no one else will. And it just will not happen. So I really believe that it's an imperative that at a soul level, our souls are demanding that uniqueness, that unique human potential to be expressed in each one of our cases, and that it's demanding that we go for personal excellence, whatever that may look like. You know, in somebody's case, it may look making the best chocolate cake this side of the Mississippi. In somebody else's case, it might be writing an Oscar-winning screenplay. It doesn't matter what that is. What does matter is that we give ourselves fully to that and that we express ourselves without holding anything back, no matter what the consequences.
Mm-hmm. And it may mean putting ourselves into having children and raising them to the possibly best parent we can be, or choosing not to have children and putting those that same energy into nurturing in other aspects of the world in our community.
Exactly, exactly. It's that personal excellence. Nobody really can tell us what that is. Sometimes we can look at somebody else and know when they're not being authentic. You know, there's a feeling of inauthenticity or lack of genuine expression, even if it's subconscious. But nobody can tell us what's that unique human potential is. It's only up for us to discover, and it's only by going within that we get to do that. Nobody can tell us. You can read so many books, and you can go to so many workshops, and yeah, all those things help, but the answer is ultimately within, and nobody can do that work of inner exploration for us. And what's interesting, too, is that if we look at all the religions, all the spiritual traditions of the world, they're all saying that in one way or another, that the answers are within.
I say that always to my clients. As a therapist, I'm always saying that I have nothing to teach a client or anyone. My job is to help them go inside to the innate wisdom that we were all born with and to help access that again. And I think that's what you're saying here again.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, exactly. Beautifully said. That's exactly right. And you're sort of the guide or the facilitator or the gatekeeper, if you would, that allows somebody, that facilitates, makes it easier for somebody to go inside and do what, to me, it's really heroic work. You know, these days we don't have like dragons to go out and slay, but some of us do. Yeah, well, we do have them, the inner ones, the ones inside, right, are the ones that are there to be slain, and that work is heroic. It's really beautiful, powerful, and I think it's selfless work, because even though ultimately, in a very direct way, we're doing it for ourselves, because when we do that work is when we find out who we are, and we find fulfillment and happiness. But in a very real way, we're also doing it for all of us, for all those who don't, our loved ones, and those even who we don't know, that don't have the opportunity or the willingness or the know-how to do that inner exploration. So that's what I mean.
That's
the
concept of throwing the stone into the lake and the ripple effect that goes out. We have no idea who's being touched by those ripples.
Exactly.
Sometimes years later. Now, I want to remind my listeners that this is a live show tonight, and if you are on a exploration of your own inwardly and you want to talk about it or ask some questions to Christian or myself, the phone number in the Phoenix area is 480-949-1310. That's 480-949-1310. And if you're listening via the internet from outside the Phoenix area, as I know a number of you are, we've had some callers recently from outside the Phoenix area, it's the same number, 480-949-1310. Now, you talked about courage and heroes and guides and other names like gurus and clergy and all this other stuff. You know, basically, that, again, is the essence of what a good teacher, good therapist, good friend is creating for anybody. Like when someone's coming into my office, the first and foremost thing is, it's my job to create a safe environment for somebody to go inside and to question what needs to be questioned and to uncover things that they have been so frightened to uncover. And that's really what being in the presence of a teacher, a guru, a therapist, whatever you want to call it, is really about, is creating a safe place for someone to do the uncomfortable work inside themselves, which gets us into actually defining You know, we use the word interchangeably, religion, spirituality, spirituality, religion. There's a couple of passages in your book that I'd like to read, but I'd like you to start by actually describing the difference between what you mean by spirituality and what you mean by religion.
Yeah, it's a great question, because so many of us get caught up on that and get confused. And like me, who I didn't know any better, when I came up against myself and I had to make a choice between who I was as a human being in all my fullness and the religion in which I was raised, because that religion didn't have enough room for me, so I threw the baby out with the baptismal water. I wanted nothing to do with anything that smacked of religion or spirituality or God or anything like that, not knowing that there was a difference. And so when they do come together, when they do merge religion and spirituality, it's great, and of course it happens. But too often, we also know that it doesn't happen, that people who profess to be very religious are really lacking a sense of connectedness and a sense of compassion and a sense of transcendence and coming from a deeper way of being. So, and all we have to do is turn on the TV and watch some of the televangelists, and to know that that's the difference, that you can be religious and not spiritual. To me, religion is one way to begin to talk about it. It comes from the Latin root religare, which means to rebind, and presumably we're rebinding to the divine. But to me, that still feels a sense of restriction. It feels like a dogma and rules and hierarchies. Whereas spirituality comes from the Latin spirare, from which root we get both spirit and breath. Expiration, inspiration. And so for me, spirituality is much more open and fluid. It's much more life-giving. To me, it's about a very personal and a very individual and a very direct connection to the divine, however you relate to that. And there's so many names that we can attribute to that. And we can get into those more specifically. But to me, it's call it what you want. It's something that makes the universe function, that's and of which we're a part, that we're not separate from. And to me, spirituality is about that. It's about helping us connect with that in a very personal way in each of our bodies.
For some of us, that spirituality can actually be expressed in a very healthy way through a particular religion. Mm-hmm. For some of us, I mean, to me, the difference is that spirituality is a very personalized, internal connection with a higher power, with God, whatever you want to call it. Religion is more of an externalized construct, man-made, that holds the rituals, the structure, the rules, all this other stuff that actually, for some people, it can be very healthy, and in some religions, it's actually done in a compassionate way. But even in the context of any one particular religion, you have so many different human beings interpreting so much of that in so many different ways that it ends up causing infighting within each religion as well as between the various religions. I was raised Jewish, and I was brought up a Reform Jew, and I had Orthodox Jewish friends who considered me non-Jewish because of that. Mm-hmm. And you see that going on in Israel today. You also see what's going on in, let's say, Northern Ireland between Catholics and Protestants. They're all Christian, but there's killing being done in the name of God. The Crusades were another example. And what's going on in the Middle East and Afghanistan, throughout the world, it's so much damage has been done in the name of God and religion, and people saying it's about a spiritual commitment and a spiritual path. It's really been bastardized, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. I do a presentation that I do in colleges and universities and churches and temples and other settings that's called Beyond Belief. It's about moving beyond that self-righteousness of my God is bigger than your God, what they call a theological pissing contest. And which is what gets us, there's the sad truth, the irony of all this is that if we look at the headlines on any given morning or read or watch the evening news on any given night, that the majority of the world's violence and conflict is due to religious differences.
Yeah.
And the things that we do to each other in the name of God are just, if there is an abomination, that's an abomination.
Right. And
to me, even taking it even further, the worst crime that the religions do, and not all, but is creating a boundary or a separation between us and God, between us and the divine, by making us believe that we need to go through an intercessor to have a direct experience of God, and that to me that's an abomination as well.
For example, what do you mean an intercessor? Talking like a priest or a rabbi?
Yeah, exactly.
Or those religions that say this is the individual that is the contact to God, and you can't have a personal communication yourself.
Exactly. You have to go through a cleric or somebody in order to get an answer or a communication from God, or to decide what's right or wrong. So it's all teaching us to go external, to look outside of ourselves for answers, or for connection, or for love, or for understanding, where the reality is we need to go inside.
It's doing one other thing, Christian, from my opinion, is that it's also creating a mindset in the believers that they are less than.
Exactly.
That it's about impacting self-esteem, self-worth, worthiness, like I'm not worthy of God speaking to me directly or me praying directly or communicating, and that it builds a society and a culture of a beliefs of lack of worthiness.
Yes, absolutely.
And so the expression and the reactionary part to that is people need to prove how worthy they are, how strong they are. So it's like all this aggressiveness may come in reaction to that.
Yeah.
It's the same thing when you're growing up in a family. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's very infantilizing. It makes us, in terms of into kids, into children, and not in a positive, innocent way, in an unhealthy way. And let's not knock religion completely. I haven't given up hope on the religions. Obviously, I still, I don't belong to any one of them. I'm fed and respect all of them, and I'm fed by the traditions of many of them, and the rituals and the beliefs, and there's a very beautiful aspect to the religions. There's a rabbi that I interviewed, Rabbi Eric Weiss, whom I interviewed for Coming Out Spiritually, and he had a beautiful way to talk about the difference between spirituality and religion. And he said that to him, spirituality is about awe. About it, helping us to get in touch with our own sense of awe, whether it's in front of a sunset or in front of a statue of Buddha or Jesus or Shiva, it doesn't matter, or any manifestation of a goddess. That is by getting us into that sense of awe, and that what the religions do is to provide sort of a context, a structure, like you were saying earlier, for that awe. Like it provides a calendar, it provides a sense of community, a reminder so that we don't get sucked away by the demands of our daily life. Reminds us to do things to connect with the divine, with God. Provides music, a tradition, a sense of community and family, and even a culture. So they definitely provide a service. But I think where we get in trouble is where we start buying into the mistaken belief, in my book, that there's only one way to speak with God and there's only one path to the divine, and that everybody else is a sinner or an infidel, or there's something wrong with them.
Right. So getting back to also the psychological issues, as a therapist and as a human being in my own life, you were talking about this earlier to a certain extent, is what I call the religious trauma that we've all gone through to varying degrees. In other words, as we're growing up, the religion that we were raised in making certain judgments on us or calling us sinners for this reason or that reason, or feeling totally excluded or exclusive in terms of a sense of connection and belonging of ourselves as individuals, but also sometimes making us feel outside the community because we are a particular religion. So a lot of times in therapy, people are seeking to get back to a loving relationship with God, with spirit and stuff, but there's so much emotional and psychological damage that's been done that they don't know where to turn, and they feel guilty about checking out other religious groups, or they feel too angry to re-explore the issues that went on in childhood in order to heal them and maybe find a healthier connection to their own religion.
Yes,
so people may be listening to the show and thinking, well, what am I doing a show about religion and spirituality? Because these are issues that people go into therapy for, and like I said earlier, that all of this has to be dealt with in order for an individual to feel completely integrated and whole.
Yeah. You can't ignore, repress, or suppress any part of who we are, whether mm-hmm. it's our sexuality or whether it's our spirituality. As long as we keep doing that, repressing, ignoring, trying to look the other way, trying to sublimate whatever it is that we're trying to not deal with, there's no possibility that we can be at ease with ourselves, that we can be fulfilled as human beings, that we can be happy, that we can have really functioning lives and relationships, that we can have a sense of fulfillment and being at ease in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you're right. I think these are fundamental issues that, unfortunately, too many therapists are afraid to touch. But in my book, I completely agree with you. I don't think that you can do a real profound psychotherapeutic process that's looking at the whole being if you're going to ignore this whole issue of spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
It's fundamental. As far as I'm concerned, we're all spiritual beings who happen to be having a physical experience, whether it's one time or many times, according to your system of beliefs. And at that level of spirit, it doesn't matter one bit, by the way, what the skin pigmentation is, or what we do for a living, what we believe, what's between our legs, or what we do with them. We all share as human beings that divine essence, that divine spark, that makes all of us these magnificent, amazing, indescribably beautiful beings that we call human beings. That we haven't even begun to realize who we are and what we're capable of.
Well, I definitely agree with you on all that. I want to remind my listeners, if you feel like calling in with a question, or you have, if there's something you're really agreeing with us, or if there's something you really take issue with us, feel free to call in. The number is 480-949-1310. That's 949-1310. So we've talked a lot about spirituality and religion. In your book, you also have a whole section where you talk about various paths to spiritual connection. You know, you mentioned psychotherapy, you mentioned other things. What are some of the paths that have worked for you, and what are some of the things that you suggest that people check out in terms of their own exploration and journey?
Yeah, to me, again, it's all about finding something that works for you, that's going to support you to go within. And there are many, many ways to do that. And so let's back up a little bit and say why. You know, let's look at, we're speaking about how some of the religions, or really all the religions, are saying that in some way or another. So let's look at the one that's the predominant religion in our country, Christianity, where Jesus is said to have said that the kingdom of God is within. And that he also said, by the way, that these and greater things you will do. So the whole purpose of Eastern meditation practices, whether Hindu or Buddhist-based, is to help quiet the mind, what the Buddhists call the monkey mind, or the little egoic mind, or some traditions call it the little self or the personality, to help it quiet from its constant, nonstop chattering, so that we can access that deeper, greater part of us that resides underneath that and beyond that. And so what are some of the ways that we can do that? There's, you know, meditation practices, and there's so many types of those. There's sitting meditation, and there's more active type meditations like a walking meditation, or some movement meditation practices like Tai Chi or Qigong. breathwork, I know, is one that has worked for you and for me. For me, I don't know of anything more effective in terms, not only in terms of healing past trauma, things that we may not even be aware of that happened to us 20, 30, 40 years ago, and we're still reacting from that trauma, not even aware of it. But also, I don't know anything more that connects more quickly, that causes a spiritual centering and a profound level of spiritual experience just by breathing in a particular way for about an hour. So for me, that's definitely part of my spiritual practice and expression, and it's something that has changed my life. There's also communing in nature really works for me, you know, just taking time to go be by myself and, you know, take a hike, or, you know, go to the ocean. I'm really blessed that I live in Northern California where that's so beautiful and so available. But we really do have it available. Even in metropolitan areas, there are parks where we can go and connect and commune with nature.
And sometimes even in your own backyard.
Exactly.
Really, I mean, you may live in an urban area, but communing with nature sometimes just means sitting with a potted flower, or, you know, connecting with a tree in your yard, or just watching the sunset behind your backyard.
Yep, looking at the sky, looking at the stars. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. If you're in a city where that's possible, that's great. You know, dancing.
Actually, I've been communing with nature lately, because even though I'm in Hollywood and not up in the hills, really, a coyote has made my backyard her territory for the last week.
Wow, so that's so
every
great.
Morning, every morning I wake up and there's this coyote either standing on one of the ledges in my backyard, or curled up in the dirt back there or something like that. And unfortunately, it's not the safest thing to allow to progress, so I scream and she runs, and every morning for the last week she's been back in the yard.
Wow.
So it's not something you get to see very often, even especially if you live in a city.
Well, it's amazing that that's happening in Hollywood, and as you know, in the indigenous, especially the Native American traditions, coyote has a particular kind of medicine where
the trickster.
So do you see that showing up in your life?
There's a lot of stuff with that going on. In fact, I thought of that during the week. You know, a lot of chaos and a lot of things that I think are certain ways may not be certain ways that I think they are, if that makes any sense. So there was something else that actually Sandra Ray, who's a teacher for both of us, had mentioned that I've always experienced, and that is international travel being an incredible source of spiritual purification.
Mm-hmm.
Because it gets you out of what's familiar. It gets you out of a language you're familiar with, or a currency you're familiar with, or a culture you're familiar with, and forces you actually to kind of trust
mm-hmm.
a lot more, and to connect with people in ways where maybe you can't talk the same language, or culturally things are different. And to me, you don't need to travel internationally to do that. There are communities within our own community where we could take part in their festivals. We could check out their places of worship. We could go to the stores that they tend to shop in and just experience a culture that's, in a sense, foreign to who we are, because it's also a good way to gain greater understanding, compassion, and tolerance of one another.
And
to me, that's part of the essence of spiritual connection, is that tolerance and embracing of the differences instead of judging the differences.
Yeah, absolutely. And it reminds me, too, that that one of the things that travel does, or even going to expose oneself to different cultures and different religions and different spiritual practices and traditions, is that it helps us realize, and I know that we get it at an intellectual level because we've read it so much, but you know, the fact that we're all one, and that we, that even that this is, these aren't just pretty poetic, you know, California woo-woo kumbaya words, that it's now a scientific fact that quantum physicists are telling us that we really are one, and that we all share the same source. And that the same, that 99.70% of the atoms in our bodies are actually atoms that are found in the stars, so that we're literally made of star stuff. And that I forget the exact percentage, but 50-60% of our hydrogen atoms were actually present at the Big Bang. And so anything that we do, yeah, isn't that amazing, mind-blowing?
Mm-hmm.
That anything that we do that helps us connect with each other and to realize that oneness. And you know, another way to think about it is that we think that we're like different races. Well, you know, guess what? 99.9% of our DNA is the same, regardless of our skin coloring. And that doesn't quite cut it in terms of being a different species. So we're literally just one species, one race. And to put things in context, we share 98.4% of our DNA with chimps and 50% of our DNA with bananas.
Mm-hmm.
So that it also goes to remind us of what the indigenous traditions are so wise about and so wise about and help us to remember that we really are one with the fabric of creation, not just with other human beings.
Well, and it's interesting because it's people who are creationists really that take the most issue with our connection to the chimps and everything else. So it's important that science really so much hatred and judgment has come out of the religious and cultural inability to hear scientific fact and information, or at least scientific theory, and consider the possibility of it. I mean, we saw what happened with Christianity and Galileo and Da Vinci, who were considered heretics because they were discovering and teaching things that today we take as matter of fact in terms of our belief system of, you know, the earth, you know, revolving around the sun and not the opposite. And
right.
I was watching, I love watching documentaries like Modern Marvels and things like that. And,
right.
and just last night, they were talking about Benjamin Franklin and the lightning rod. And, of course, we know the lightning rod has saved multitude of property and lives and things like that because it absorbs the electricity into the grounded lightning rod instead of hitting the house and burning it down. But one thing I didn't know was that when Benjamin Franklin started putting lightning rods on buildings and professing to do this, the clergy were against the use of lightning rods because they believed that lightning expressed the wrath of God and should not be tampered with.
Yeah.
So it's like,
amazing.
So if you look at something as simple as that, of course they didn't understand it because people really didn't understand electricity and what lightning was about. But the very thing that maybe in earlier times Franklin could have been burned at the stake for doing just that, same thing's going on today, I believe. You know, that in the name of religion, people are saying, well, this is the way it always was, this is the way it is, and what you're saying scientifically is not true. And 20 years from now, or 50 years from now, or 10 years from now, it's going to be a much more accepted thing. I mean, that's true for a lot of situations.
Yeah, of course. And you know, and why is it? Why isn't it interesting that we don't even consider it amazing that we allow for science to evolve so that our thinking, you know, for 500 years ago, when Galileo thought that, I mean, when people before Galileo thought that the Earth was the center of the universe, so that, of course, we now, as we have the ability to measure and to observe the universe, that our understanding of it has just grown exponentially. And so we allow room for that. But when it comes to religion, it's like, no, we could, there's so many people, so many religious leaders in the world that would be completely at home having the same conversation with somebody 1,500 years ago, with another theologian from
right.
500 years ago or 1,000 years
mm-hmm.
ago. So, you know, what does that tell us? And also, I kind of lost my train of thought on what I was going to say there.
happens to me all the time. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, when you go to out there on the universe.
Let me ask you a question then.
Go ahead.
We've spent a lot of time talking about spirituality as it relates to every human being on this planet. Whether you agree with what we're saying or disagree with what we're saying, the issues and the concerns are relevant to every human being, for better or worse, whatever. But your book and a lot of your work actually is, if I can use the word, ministering to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community. So I want to talk for a little bit before we run out of time in terms of what's what's the added level of the spiritual and religious conflict that the GLBT community often may be experiencing above and beyond what we've already talked about?
Well, it's an existential angst, an existential confusion, a self-denial, a self-hatred that it's so difficult to explain to somebody who hasn't gone through that. It's to deny yourself at the most fundamental level is to believe that God has condemned you or deems you an abomination. That's a pretty heavy-duty thing to grow up with.
Mm-hmm.
And then to have to choose at a very early age for many of us to walk away from our religions in which we were raised, especially those that carry dogma saying that this is it. This is the one and only path, and if you abandon this path, you're doomed to damnation for eternity. It's a very painful, incredibly painful thing to have to experience. And there's a total upside to that. There's a gift in that, which is that it forces us to look inside, that it forces us to come to terms with ourselves. It forces us to develop and discover our own spirituality, our own connection to the divine, and deepen our sense of who we are. So in a way, there's, you know, that's the silver cloud, that the blessing in that. But I wouldn't wish that pain of, you know, that sense of alienation, that constant state of depression that was my adolescence to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I guess there is something to be said for the hierarchy of sins in Catholicism, that suicide is a worse sin, that I didn't take my life. But we mm-hmm. know that many young gay, lesbian, bi, trans people do take their lives because they just can't cope with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the rate of suicide, you might know the recent studies more than I do, but it's at least three times as high for the GLBT kids
right.
than it is for their straight counterparts. So, you know, it's a very painful, very difficult thing to go through.
Right. So it's the alienation above everything else. So it's not just I'm feeling separate and different because of these sexual feelings that I have towards the same sex, but also now I'm being damned, I'm being excommunicated, I'm being rejected, or I'm living a lie because if they only knew what was really going on inside of me,
right.
they wouldn't think I was such a good person.
Right, right, right. And what's ironic about that, of course, is that because of those mistaken and mistranslated moral teachings, teachings that were taken out of their cultural and historical context, that so many, not only gay and lesbian and bi and trans people have gone through their death feeling less than or that there was something wrong with them, but also many heterosexual people have gone through their death, thinking that there was something wrong with them. Because
mm-hmm.
of those misinterpreted teachings, but focusing again on the that's an abomination in my book.
Mm-hmm.
But focusing on the gay and lesbian aspect of it, what's ironic if we look at any religion now, it's like that issue is not only at the heart of every religion is experiencing at least inner conflict, and in some cases, the very likelihood of schism over this issue of gay and lesbian inclusion. And that issue, as we know, is at the heart of the culture wars right now. And so it's interesting because the irony of that is that before the patriarchal cultures and religions, back in the days when the divine aspects of the feminine were honored and when women were honored, people that we today call gay, lesbian, bi, trans were not only spiritually inclined, but were actually honored and respected and revered for the roles of spiritual service and spiritual leadership that they played in many cultural contexts all over this planet. And that's the tragedy that's been lost. There's one of the stories that I often talk about when I present on this is there's the gatekeeper archetype, you know, the role, one of the many roles that, spiritual roles that we have played throughout history. Is one that I got from the Africa tribe, an African tribe called the Dagra, the work of a man named Maladoma Somme, who brought their wisdom to us. And in the Dagra worldview, they feel that there's certain, you know, that the earth is made of certain, it's like a matrix of energy, a web of energy that has like certain doorways or gateways into different worlds, different realities, different realms. And in their philosophy, in their worldview, only people that we in the West would call gay or lesbian are energetically and physiologically able to fulfill the role of gatekeepers, of being the guardians to these gateways, to these other worlds. And they say that part of the reason that the world is in the shape that it's in is because the gatekeepers have been fired from their jobs. Which I think is why it's so crucially important that the gay, lesbian, bi, trans community reclaim all these spiritual roles and our spiritual heritage, such a rich spiritual heritage that we have, not only for our own self-fulfillment and our own healing and the healing of our community, but ultimately and most importantly, I feel, for the healing of the world, because the world, though it doesn't know it yet, it's calling out for us to reclaim these roles.
Yeah, I agree.
Because it's running off kilter. It's been running off balance in the same way that it does when it oppresses anybody, whether it's women or any other kind of racial or ethnic minority. But in this case, we're talking about a minority that crosses all boundaries, that is found in every continent, in every ethnic group, in every religion, in every nationality, in every skin color, and a group that there's so much evidence has played such a significant role in the spiritual arena throughout history.
I want to read you something, Christian, and then I'm going to tell you where it's from, because it's partly what you're saying here. The quote is, it's from an introduction from a book which I'll tell you after I read it. Anyhow, with their extraordinary gift for and experience in affairs of the heart, from the double point of view, both of the man and of the woman, it is not difficult to see that these people have a special work to do as reconcilers and interpreters of the two sexes to each other. Which is basically what you were describing from all these native traditions. But this was a book called The Intermediate Sex, written by a man named Edward Carpenter in 1898.
Yes.
And he writes about homosexuality as an intermediate sex, and it's an amazing thing, because I found this book in an antique book in an antique store a couple of years ago, and it's very interesting to see essays written about homosexuality from a place that really is rather positive in its view. And culturally so representative of its time too, because of the conflict it talks about.
Yeah, you're very blessed to have found a copy of that book. It's very difficult to find.
Do you have a copy?
No, I don't. I don't.
Well, I see it occasionally when I'm doing my antiquing. I'll pick up the next one for you.
Please do. Yeah, I would love that. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say that that what that reminded me of is that one of the archetypes that I write about that we have fulfilled throughout history. Is the mediator, and that in many indigenous contexts we were thought to contain the essence or the soul of both male and female. So this is not only the Western guy saying this, but in many indigenous contexts, like the Native Americans, for example, we now know that modern day Native Americans call themselves who are gay or lesbian or bi or trans, call themselves two spirits, because they were thought to contain within them the essence of the soul of both genders. So that made us perfect mediators between the genders, so that when there was marital strife in a tribe or even a problem between the genders, between the men and the women in a village, we were the ones that mediated those difficulties, because we could sort of walk between those two worlds.
Well, definitely, and I think some of us still believe in a non-healthy way we're still walking between two worlds.
Yeah.
There's another paragraph that I want to read, and it really is about a core issue, because it's under the title Moving Through Fear, because, dealing with, people in therapy, the core of what most of us are struggling with is fear of healing and fear of going inside in order to get to the other side of things. And I like what you write here. It says, here's how it works. We place ourselves in situations that are progressively a bit more of a stretch for us, but not so uncomfortable that we flip out and slink back into our caves, tails between our legs, never to be seen or heard from again. We take steps of appropriate size. It is also important to be gentle and compassionate with ourselves, while not letting ourselves off the hook. We take ourselves as far as we can and as gradually as we want to the edge, to our limit. This means stretching, rising above previous limitations. It means taking risks and moving beyond our zones of safety and comfort, which, of course, will be different for each one of us. Only we know where that line is. It is important to push it out and do so regularly. It will be worth any temporary discomfort, which is the sacrifice we make as we commit to excel, to grow, to overcome our past and liberate ourselves from our own fear, limitations, and self-made prisons. Now, again, that obviously applies to the GLBT community and the work that all of us are called to do, but that is so at the core of what all of our work as human beings are on this planet, which is facing the fear and finding ways of stretching those limits and moving through them. I really appreciated the way you wrote that.
Thank you, and I appreciate that you reminded me that I wrote that, because I forgot I wrote that, and I was like, wow, that's good. And
I can use
that at my retreat.
I think it's so important, and I know a lot of times, you know, it's strange to hear our own voice. Like, very rarely do I listen to the tapes of this show, but when I do have to, for whatever reason, or choose to, I'm going, wow, that's not so bad.
Yeah, I totally get that. Yeah, we do a retreat that's called Opening to Breath, Opening to Purpose, my partner Marcus and I, who, you know, it's about helping people get in touch with the real mission level, you know, soul level work, reason that we came here for. And so, of course, there's a lot of that we spend time on moving through fear. And the model that I use is from a book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway by a woman named Kristen Jeffers, which is, you know, basically it's what we're talking about, where, you know, if you have like a series of concentric circles, the inner circle, the small circle, is what's called a zone of comfort. This is where we're comfortable in being in the world and relating to other people in certain ways and that. And so that every time we take a little risk, a little step, and it could be tiny, it could be minute, just by doing something that brings about that level of discomfort that we have to stretch for, even if it's just a tiny bit, after the end of a week, you know, then we're like three or four levels up, because the circles are up, and, you know, after a month, we're like even expanded even further. And after the end of the year, we're like way out there. Our zone of comfort is like way expanded, and it doesn't shrink back. So it's as simple as that. And a perfect story to tell to illustrate was that, to how that works is like, and I did this kind of intuitive before even I knew of how to do it or heard of Susan Jeffers or this model or anything like that. But when I was a teenager, I was just painfully, morbidly shy. I was so shy. I was okay one-on-one, but if you brought in a third person, I totally clammed up. And yet I knew, and speaking in public was like, you know, not even within the realm of possibility. But I knew that if I was going to fulfill my purpose, that I had to get through that. So I signed up for a public speaking class. And every Thursday night for 14 weeks, I dreaded, I hated, I got nervous in anticipation of Thursday nights, because every Thursday night I'd have to get up three times and give a two-minute speech. And so, you know, but what happened? You know, that towards the end of the 14 weeks, it wasn't such a big deal. And having to do it over and over and over again, it works. It sort of flattens that little button. And so now these days, you know, I speak in front of thousands of people, and I still have to move through a little butterflies as I get up to speak. But once I get started, it's like it's gone. So I know that this stuff really works.
Well, I can relate to that, too, because it really is true. I mean, you know, practice makes perfect if you want to simplify it that much. But there's actually, I mean, I used to be terrified of, I mean, if I had to give a talk in front of the class, elementary school, even through college, I'd be up all night the night before. I'd be sweating and shaking and stuttering my whole way through it. And now, give me a microphone and I'll go. I don't even need an outline in front of me because I just love it so much.
Yeah.
So we only have a couple of minutes left. I want to make sure people know that you do have a couple of websites. One is called qspirit.org, and revolutionarywisdom.us.
Mm-hmm.
So if they want to reach you, or they, if people want to find out more about what workshops you have coming up and where, and articles you've written, if they want to get in touch with you, they could go to revolutionarywisdom.us, not .com, but .us, and you can email Christian de la Huerta, author of Coming Out Spiritually, The Next Step, or if you forget that, but you of course remember the name of my show, TellTheTruthFaster.com. You can go to my website, TellTheTruthFaster.com, and email myself or Christian, and this show will be archived within the week so you could listen to it again or get some friends to listen to it. Christian, I really want to thank you for taking time on a Friday night. I'm so glad to have reconnected with you personally.
Same here.
And I'm hoping it doesn't take us another 9 years to see each other again.
Please, it's like we're in the same state. I know it's a big state, but it's just we're in the same state. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. And I want to thank all of you for listening tonight. This is Stuart Altshuler with Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM, 1310 AM in Phoenix. We'll be back next Friday night. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.
That I heard of once.